Hey everybody, it's Matt from Solidarity House. Welcome to another episode of Solidarity Wyoming. We have some news, some fresh updates about the situation here in Laramie with Derek Colling, the sheriff's deputy who has now killed three people, including Robbie Ramirez in Laramie, an unarmed, mentally ill man. Deputy Colling was not charged with anything for this killing. It is his third killing. He also was fired from the Las Vegas Police Department for beating up an innocent person. And that was all caught on video, and that cost the Las Vegas Police Department a lot of money. And now we are in this situation here in Albany County and in the city of Laramie. And what was just learned was that Derek Colling is not going to lose his job. He is still going to be a cop. And I'm going to read you the press release put out by Albany County for Proper Policing, or ACOP, on their website. I'm just going to read portions of that. This was just put out today, January 28th. Albany County Sheriff's Corporal Derek Colling will likely return to work within the next few weeks, according to Albany County Sheriff Dave O'Malley. On January 10th, a grand jury declined to indict Colling for his killing of Robbie Ramirez in the line of duty last November. Colling has been on paid administrative leave since the killing. In a meeting with Albany County for Proper Policing last week, O'Malley said that Colling would likely return to work as a detective, not as a patrol officer. O'Malley said that given the high-profile shooting and the tensions it has created within the Albany County community, it would be more appropriate to have Colling off patrol and out of uniform. But, O'Malley said, since the grand jury declined to indict Colling, and since O'Malley still considers Colling a good officer, the sheriff said he has no standing to dismiss Colling or to assign him to a lesser position. ACOP's founding members say they are deeply dismayed to learn that Colling will return to work with the sheriff's office. The group, which formed shortly after Ramirez's killing, has heard from countless Albany County residents who have said they feel unsafe with Colling working here in law enforcement. At a community forum ACOP hosted in January, dozens of residents expressed deep reservations about Colling's decision-making abilities and his repeated use of force. Ramirez is the third person Colling has killed in the line of duty. Colling was also fired from the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department for a separate on-duty assault. According to ACOP, Colling's return to work threatens the element of trust between the officers and the community that is necessary for proper law enforcement. At its meeting with O'Malley last week, ACOP members and the sheriff discussed a wide range of potential systemic reforms that the Albany County Sheriff's Office would like to pursue in the wake of Ramirez's killing. ACOP looks forward to future discussions with the sheriff regarding such reforms. So that's the press release put out by Albany County for Proper Policing in response to the news that they received in a private meeting with Sheriff Dave O'Malley of Albany County that Derek Colling will not lose his job. He will still be a cop, still be working for the sheriff's office. He will simply have a detective job instead of a uniform patrol job.
My name is Antonio Serrano. I'm the chairman of Juntos, and a lot of people call me the founder, but I'm actually co-founder with my cousin. I got a lot of titles. I also work for the ACLU, which I'm very, very, very proud of and very happy to be, and I feel very lucky to be there. Born here in Cheyenne, and then the first half of my life, I spent out in the country on farms and small towns, and then the rest of the life here in Cheyenne.
So Juntos means together in Spanish. So what or who are you bringing together through your work, and why did you and your cousin start this organization?
Well, right now, I think what we're bringing together is like-minded people who really feel the same way about immigrant justice. We've been meeting with a lot of great people in the past few years across the state and just national people who are doing the same kind of work. And we're really making a lot of connections to, and we're starting a lot of work. We've been doing work, but it feels like, especially in the past year, things have really stepped up. Like a lot of things have been happening. Mm-hmm. And what I really would like to bring together is all Latino and Latinx people in Wyoming you know, to stand together and to be really active. And because we kind of have a low profile here, you know, and I would love for us to be like really present at the legislature, really present at every community forum, just there raising our voices all the time. You know, that's what I really want, is to bring my community together, you know, and raise them up.
So a lot of people listen to our podcast and they're not from Wyoming. And I wonder if, you know, particularly for those folks who may not even really get it, that there are people of color and a significant Latinx population in Wyoming. I wonder if you could like give us a little bit of a glimpse of that, like maybe even kind of like a state of the Latinx community in Wyoming report, so that we understand better what the context is here that y'all are working in.
We're here. We're everywhere. I mean, you go to small towns, there's people working on ranches or working in a grocery store. Coming to the city, there's people owning restaurants and businesses. Like, we're everywhere. We're in every part of the state. And I think the thing is why people don't really think that we're here. We're just, like I said earlier, we're low profile. We stay quiet. You know, we don't get involved with politics locally really too much. We don't ruffle feathers. We just do what we do to take care of ourselves and our family and just, you know, try and live our lives, you know. And that's kind of the way it's always been. It's just always, you know, and then keep your head down, just do what you got to do. And it kind of put us in some tough situations growing up, you know. You go to the store and you get followed, you know, and you just ignore it. Just ignore it. And you always have to be the bigger person. And it gets old after a while. You get tired of being the bigger person, you know, and these people still doing it. Even now as an adult, I still get followed. And I work really hard for my money. I'm not going to steal nothing. And that's just a crappy feeling that we have to put up with. And, you know, as I've really got involved in this work and had a lot more conversations with my people in other parts of the state, I really realized that it's not just me going through that. It wasn't just my family dealing with that in our little corner in Southeast. You know, all of us are going through that all over the state. And that's a big part. Like, there's so many parts to the reasons I got into this work, but that's a big part of it too, is like, I'm fed up with that. And I think it's time for us to like say, you know what, this isn't right. We're going to start making some changes. We're going to start having some tough conversations with people who don't want to have them, and really, you know, make the Wyoming the equality state it claims to be. Me personally, before I got involved with all this kind of work, you know, that's when I really got hassled a lot. When I was really young, things like getting yanked out of my vehicle, like things you would only see in movies or hear about, that you would like, no, that doesn't happen. You know, like I remember there was this cop who yanked me out of my vehicle, threw me in the dirt, told me not to move. They searched my vehicle, didn't find nothing, threw everything out, just threw it all out. And like, it was nothing. And then when they were done, they said, you know, have a nice night. I had to pick up all my things, you know, and then, you know, that hurt enough. That was bad enough. But, you know, the thing that was really bad is there's people on that street that knew me, that saw this happening, and they could have come out and said, hey, he's not, that's a good kid. He's not, you know, yeah, he could have done something. And I think people too much nowadays, I don't know about now. It seems like now people are really, they're not being quiet and they're really raising their voices, which is awesome. But for a long time, people just turned a blind eye to stuff like that. And they just like, well, it's not my business. You know, I shouldn't get involved, but it's a horrible feeling, you know, to have a cop do thing like that, something like that to you. And you like, you can't do anything. You can't go lodge a complaint because nothing's going to happen. Hmm. You know, you get called a racial slur by a cop, you know, which I have been. And it's, what do you say back? What do you do back? It's just going to make it worse for you. You know what I mean? You just got to take it. And nobody should be going through that. Nobody. You know, and it's just, it's been happening. You know, I know it's really hot. Everything's in the news. Everything locally that's happening. You know, it's great that people are having these conversations and that people are talking about it, that it's out there. You know, it's awesome. That's what it needs to be. But this has been happening forever. I really wish more people would come out and say what's happening, you know, especially people of color, because we get it the worst. We definitely get it the worst.
And so when you heard the news about Robbie Ramirez being shot and killed in Laramie, what was your initial response? I mean, you may not know Robbie at all, but with a last name like Ramirez, you know, there may have been like particular ways that hit hard for people in the Latinx community in Wyoming. What was your first response when you heard that news?
I told the people around me that if something ever happens to me, make sure that you make a lot of noise and you don't let it go quietly. I know that it's easier to kill a brown or a black man, that the cops, it's easier for them to do that. And when you hear of it happening, like right next door, you know, basically it's a scary thing because, you know, I'm out there, you know, it's, my name's out there, you know, I like to ruffle feathers no matter what side of the aisle they're on, you know, I tell how it is and I call people on their BS, you know, and that's the way I feel I need to be, but it also could get some people really angry, you know, and we live in the most armed state in the country. All it takes is one wacko to decide, you know what, I'm tired of this guy. And, you know, cause I've seen the comments on social media. I've seen, you know, what people say. Who knows what people are capable of? And then when it's a cop, you know nothing's going to ever happen. You know there's never going to be justice. You know that he's going to get away with it, and he's going to either just get a slap on the wrist and be back to work next week. It's just the way the world is, you know? And there's a lot of things that really need to change before we have real justice, you know? It's just, it makes me nervous. It makes me have a lot more conversations with my sons. I know how they can get profiled. It's scary.
And I appreciate that you're also showing up and starting to have those hard conversations with white people, because, you know, it's not your job, and it also helps to have somebody that you know say, like, hey, this is really real for me. And I appreciate that you're being one of those voices, and it definitely, I hear that it definitely ups your vulnerability level in the community. Like, if folks know who you are and that you're that brown guy who's, like, willing to, like, raise hell about stuff, like, that makes you a lot more vulnerable, so...
I always just think about the people who came before me when I get scared, you know, like Lourdes Huerta, she stood up to some really hateful, angry people, you know, Cesar Chavez, the same thing, you know, and they did it for our people. So I feel it's my responsibility to do the same. The main thing I could say is like the Wild Say No campaign against the immigration prison in Uinta County. You know, I've worked with planning meetings, planning calls, you know, hosting events, actions, you know, doing everything that needs to be done to make sure all this stuff goes off and goes off without a hitch, that everyone has what they need, you know, things are on time. It's just, it's like keeping all the work going, and, you know, you're like the middle person, you know. And also, you know, we're meeting with like elected officials, you know, which we did for the Wild Say No campaign. And it's, you name it, I do it. I even make buttons. I fold pamphlets. I do it all, you know. It's just, there's so much stuff that goes along with it. And it's crazy to me because I'm learning more and more every day with this. I mean, a few years ago, I was just a pig farmer, you know, and never thought I was going to be nothing more than just a working dude. And I can't believe where I'm at today, you know, like, the fact that I could call a legislator and they know who I am and they're happy to hear from me. And like, that is just, I get off the phone and I'm like, tell my wife, this is surreal. Like, you know, like this guy knows who I am. Like, you know, it feels almost like a dream sometimes, you know, like, and it's a big challenge. Cause I've, like I said, I come from that working world, you know, where you're not sitting at a desk, you're not doing this stuff. You're just running a pick or a shovel all day. It's just, to go from doing that to writing blogs and organizing meetings is like, what the heck? You know, it's a whole nother world, but I like it, you know, I really like it. It gives me a lot of opportunities to do a lot of amazing things, like see my state, which I never did. I've been able to travel all over Wyoming now. And it's just, our state is so beautiful. Like every corner has its own unique little, you know, different thing. That's just makes it separate, you know, but it's cool. And that also made me realize that our little corner, how unique it is with our flat, open nothingness. Like, there's a beauty in that, you know, and I really didn't recognize that at first, you know. And so I've got to travel a lot, you know. I've got to go to other parts of the country and meet other people doing amazing work, which has been really inspiring, because when you're doing this in your little corner in Wyoming or your little corner in Cheyenne or your little corner in Laramie or wherever you're at, it feels like some days, like, you're doing it alone. And, like, some days, see stuff on the news, you hear things, read things in articles, and you're like, damn, like, it's just bad. But, you know, I was at a recent training in DC, and I met like 50 people from all over the country doing so much amazing work, and it's just, there's hope. There's a lot of hope out there. You gotta see it. You know, we're gonna make the world a better place. I can feel it. You know, being in that world, you know, is scary sometimes. You know, like at that same meeting in D.C. when I first got there, people introduced themselves. You know, I went to Stanford, I went to Harvard, and I work at this place. And like, there's a lot of people, and then there's a few people who were kind of more low key. It's like, this is my name, and this is where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And as the training went on, and like, there was a moment where they asked us to share something, and I got really real, and they said, ask us when you joined something. So I started thinking, and like, the first thing that popped in my head is when I joined the Bernie Sanders campaign. I was like, you know, that was a big moment. But then there's something else that stuck out to me, and it was when I was young, we kind of joined up with a bad group of people when I was young. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of things that I regret. But they, like, I remember the feeling it gave me, and that's what this trainer wanted to get, is like, they gave us that being involved with those people who felt like it gave me something when I had nothing. It made me feel like I was part of something. It made me feel powerful when I felt like I wasn't. It was hard for me to share this in front, and you know, even now, it's a part of my life I'm not proud of and I don't like to talk about. But I put myself out there, and I shared this with this group. And afterwards, the trainers came up and they said, you know, that really kind of raised the bar. Like, I mean, everyone was real open after that. They said, we got a complete change in conversations. Like, people were being really real, you know. All the things that kind of made my life crappy growing up and difficult, made it challenging, that made me the man I am today, is it makes me really good at my work. You know, I can relate with that country guy, you know, because I've lived that life. I can relate with that guy living on the South Side because I lived that life. You know, I can relate to that guy who hasn't always lived an honest life because I am that guy, you know. And it's another one of those moments where it's like, what the heck is this real? You know, like how did all these things that just made my life like so hard, like, how is it like helping me now? It's just unbelievable sometimes, you know, but it's just, I don't know. It's crazy. Like at the legislature, I was there against Stand Your Ground last couple years back, and I was the only brown person in there, at least as far as I could see. Mm-hmm. And when you're the only brown person, you feel it constantly. You like when you're sitting there, you feel it, and you like, you see it, like you're looking for another person that looks like you. And it's a feeling that's weird, and I know it's not easy to understand, or it's hard to understand, you know. But I was really uncomfortable, but I got an opportunity to say how my people feel about stuff like this. It gave me a chance to put our voice out there and our thoughts out there. You talk to so many people, you know, and you know, they just were so happy that there was someone out there listening to Latinos and Latinx people in Wyoming. Like really hearing their concerns and really trying to do something, you know. And another time, we have these books that we give out as Juntos. It's like a guide for families how to prepare for deportation or how to prepare for ICE interactions, you know, and all this stuff it has in the resources. But someone gave it to a friend of theirs, and they just started crying when they got the book because they said they felt like they didn't know what to do, and they felt so scared. Another time we did a training for undocumented people, and just the person came up and shook my hand and just thanked me for being there and thanked me for doing this kind of work. And like, that's what they appreciate about what I'm doing, is what I'm doing right in these, to help them through this hard, hard time directly. You know what I mean? Cause like, you know, and even to me growing up, if I would have heard some Latino guys off in the legislature, I'd be like, so what? I don't care about that. Cause you know, we didn't, and a lot of Latinx people don't, you know what I mean? That's just a harsh reality. But they care about what I'm doing for them, you know, directly in their lives. That's really trying to help them with like that kind of work through Juntos. And that's the stuff that like really keeps me going. You know, that's the stuff that when I feel like, damn, I don't know if I can keep doing this. You know, I don't know if I could hear another person crying. I don't know if I could, I don't know if I could do that anymore. Like, it seems like at those moments is when I always get those little pick-me-ups. Like, they come at the right time. And it always just gets me going, because it reminds me, you know, those people really appreciate it, and that's what I'm doing it for, is for them. You know, I'm not doing it for anyone else.
One of the things that I've heard you talk about being really important that's connected with, you know, ICE presence in Wyoming and the, you know, the detention center that we're trying to get stopped is the Rapid Response Network project. Can you talk a little bit about that and also like what people can do to like plug into that and to actually support that work?
Yeah. So what the Rapid Response Network is I'm going to give you like a little quick history of how this started. Great. If that's cool. You know, when Juntos really started going, we started really figuring out people needed help in emergency situations. We heard about people setting up networks in other states, and we said, let's set one up. So we set one up for Laramie County only. That lasted about a week before we were getting calls from all over the state. I don't know how that happened, but it did. So we figured out we really got to find a way to help these people when we can't be there, you know what I mean? Kesley Velasco, who's our secretary of Juntos, and she's the rapid response coordinator, the lead coordinator, she communicated with CIRC in Colorado, the Colorado Immigrants' Rights Coalition. And they have been running a rapid response network there since 2008. And it's got so many nonprofits involved. Like they have so much that they do, and they've really fought for a lot of change. So they helped us do trainings, because we had like our plan or everything we're doing, but like we were trying to reinvent the wheel. And Colorado really hooked us up with a lot of good training resources, a lot of just stuff to give people, and they helped us get this one going. So we launched the Rapid Response Network. I believe it was May Day last year. It's a 1-800 number 24/7 where undocumented people or Latinx or people of color can call if they've had like any kind of abuse or feel their rights have been violated. There's two options when you call. So there's like an emergency one where someone dispatcher will actually talk to you. If say ICE comes to your door and you need to talk to somebody, we can have a dispatcher talk to you, you know, over the phone that'll speak Spanish or English. And then there's also a part where you can, if it's not an emergency, you just want to leave a story about something that happened, you could do that too. And we'll also follow up. And this is like something that's going to really help us fight for some big change. It's a way that we can document abuses. It's a way that we can document when things are happening the way they shouldn't. And we can really have, you know, the right proof to prove that, to make a change, you know? So far we've got people trained in Cheyenne, Laramie, Torrington. And we just took a trip up to Jackson where we got a whole bunch of new volunteers signed up. We're really looking to do some more trainings. So if you're interested, you can, people can go to the Rapid Response Facebook. They can go to the website and message, or there's a way to sign up there. I need to pull it up exactly. So I know that I don't have the website memorized, cause, I have my head in so many other things, but
yeah, that's okay. You can send me the links and we'll put them in the description for the episode when we broadcast this.
I usually like to, if possible, if I like to end interviews with like call to action to my people.
Right.
You know, because it seems like since I started this work, there hasn't been very many brown people involved in the work, you know. And when you're fighting for immigration justice or you're fighting for brown people and there's not too many as with you standing next to you, can be discouraging, you know, and it doesn't feel too great. So I really, you know, I need my people to join me. You know, I'll sacrifice time, I'll sacrifice everything. And I already have, and I will continue to do it for my people, fight for them, because it's an honor to fight for my people. You know, my dad sacrificed a lot just so I could be here and be where I'm at and have the privilege I do. So I have to, you know, pass it forward. But I really need all Latinos, Latinas, Latinx, Hispanics, Chicanos, Chicanas, whatever you identify as, you know, I need us all to, I need them to stand with me, and really join me and raise their voices too. And we need more leaders. We need more brown leaders in our community. We really do. I'm calling on my gente to join me.
Thank you.
Hey everybody, Matt here from Solidarity House. We are sitting here in the library of Solidarity Collective, me and Jason, and we're talking about the ongoing conversation and events surrounding mental health in Albany County, and particularly encounters with the police. And this, of course, has become an issue, became an issue again in November. It had been an issue with a police shooting before November, and then another police shooting in November. This, of course, resulting in the death of unarmed Robbie Ramirez at the hands of Derek Colling, who was hired by Albany County, even though he had been fired for beating the shit out of an innocent person, as well as had already killed two people, one of them demonstrably mentally ill. And in this instance, you know, he killed Robbie Ramirez, who Robbie was unarmed, and Robbie was mentally ill. And Colling did this and has suffered zero consequences because of the complacency of the sheriff's office and the county attorney, but also because of this ongoing lack of protocol, lack of procedure, and lack of knowledge in Albany County and probably many other rural places concerning mental health. And so we're talking about this primarily because another episode has emerged. This one not as public an episode, but another situation has emerged where a person who was a victim of head trauma while serving in Afghanistan and had suffered a motorcycle accident in Laramie that was diagnosed as a traumatic brain injury, has been judged incompetent, was assigned a guardian ad litem and a conservator, suffers from no short-term memory. And so this person nevertheless was arrested and very nearly suffered some really irredeemable legal consequences because of that. And Jason has been following that case, which of course we can't name names on, but we can kind of talk about the case and the situation and what it says about the problem of law enforcement and mental illness in Laramie City and in Albany County.
Well, thank you, Matt. And I think that this is a great opportunity. excuse me. I want to start off with just one clarification. The gentleman wasn't serving in Afghanistan. He was hired as a contractor, a private contractor. He was driving a truck and it hit an improvised explosive device. So this is all about cracks. And that was the first crack, because if he had been in the military, there might have been a Veterans Administration system to catch him. There was no real insurance. If anything, was just private insurance. It certainly wasn't ongoing. And I clearly didn't have the disability insurance. So that was the first crack. Got back, had another motorcycle accident, suffered another traumatic brain injury. So that's two TBI. Once again, did not have adequate health insurance. And situations devolve from there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's just to set it out how he came to be in that place. But those are just two cracks right off the bat. And, this gentleman, we're going to call him John, because that's what we do in law school. John Doe is always the person to say. We'll just call John. Was shopping at Walmart, and he purchased around $150 worth of stuff. And on his way out, the Walmart greeter, whoever, stopped him and said, "Hey, you've got an item in your pocket." John suffers TBI. He has no short-term memory. This has happened several times before, where he'll be shopping, he'll buy things, but he forgets that something in the cart, or forgets that he put something in his pocket, and it's not an intentional shoplift. It's 1 minute to the next, he literally can't remember anything.
And the important thing about this is that everyone, kind of all the key players, or sort of all the key agents of action in this story, either knew about that or should have known about that, because there was an effort made to tell them, to tell folks about it, and because there had been other incidents before. So everyone should have had this knowledge, and they shouldn't have even, he shouldn't have even gone into the Walmart. Is that what happened? Or
yeah, he was trespassed, marked as a trespasser, so uh-huh. he was banned from going into the Walmart. So he
but that didn't stop them in. From letting him spend $150.
Right, they let him walk right in and spend the money. Nobody said anything. Nobody stopped him. Nobody exercised that. Hey, you're not supposed to be here, John.
Yeah.
And so they did that, and he ended up going through the court system for the shoplifting. And it turns out during the course of the hearing, when he was pleading guilty to the charge of shoplifting, he told the court that he didn't remember the charges against him because he had a traumatic brain injury. And nonetheless, the court said, well, I have to have a plea from you either way. And so he said, I guess I have to plead guilty, telling the judge, I can't remember the charges against me or any of this because I have a traumatic brain injury. Is one of those points where you would expect the prosecutor
raise that question
and the judge to say, whoa, wait a second. And that didn't happen. Not to mention the fact there was somebody who was also an officer of the court, which is what attorneys are, and didn't pipe up and say, Your Honor, which he would have been able to do and wouldn't have been kicked out of the courtroom, and told him, said, I know for a fact.
Especially if he's there unrepresented, like an attorney. At that point, I've seen those situations. At that point, any attorney virtually could go and say, hey, I've got something here that might be helpful.
So this is where we're going to have, like, basically the hero of the story enter. This was his attorney, and we'll call her Joan. Okay? John and Joan. Joan is John's attorney in that she is his guardian ad litem. And that means somebody who is appointed by the state to watch out for the interests of an individual who is deemed incompetent by the law for whatever reason. They haven't reached the age of majority. They're mentally incompetent for whatever reason. There's basically those sort of the two primary reasons why you would have a guardian ad litem: incompetence and you're not old enough to make your own decisions yet. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that John had already had 14 shoplifting cases against him from Walmart that had been dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, once again, he's a totally known entity. I mean, I'm surprised they don't have a picture right there at the front that says, hey, keep an eye out for this guy. He's not supposed to come in here.
Mm-hmm.
She had them dismissed. Joan did, his attorney, earlier. Yeah, she was really she was pissed. Mm-hmm. I mean, and she was particularly upset in light of the Ramirez killing, because she's like, what is going on in Albany County that with the way that we're treating the mentally ill when it comes to how the police interact?
Well, and backing up a little bit, one of the things that I heard was that when John, not his real name, was let out of jail after his arrest, he was let out of jail in the freezing, windy snow of Laramie. And if you've ever been here, you know what we're talking about, with only a hoodie on and no provision for transportation, and basically had to walk home, at a considerable distance.
John has been adjudicated incompetent, and that's not just some willy-nilly process where you sit down and have a conversation with a shrink for an hour.
Uh-huh.
That's go to the state hospital for evaluation for an extended period of time, where there's a determination as to whether or not you're going to be cured or get better or healed. Okay, that costs thousands of dollars. It's not a simple process to be adjudicated incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, it's not only that unjust, but the state has done this deliberately, as far as this process is concerned, in order to protect people. And here we are wasting all of this money, essentially, if we're going to let this go forward, this prosecution go forward. It was set up specifically, it was a $5.92 item from Walmart. They got their money back. They got the item back. They knew we had it. There was no harm.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
well, there could have been harm, and let me tell you how there could have been harm. If Derek Colling had showed up...
If you're mentally ill and you fall into the hands of the police, your chances of dying have gone up like by 50%.
Shocking to the conscience, the number of violent encounters with the police that are attributable to mental illness and to lack of awareness about mental illness, which brings us circling back around to this hearing that eventually takes place where John's attorney argues this very thing, that Laramie is in a bad place right now, in a bad area, in a bad place, in a bad way.
And obviously, Joan said, if you want to continue with this and you want to maintain this prosecution for very little reason, And, you know, you're going to assert that he may have been healed in the 2 years since his initial assessment between 2016 and 2018.
Yeah.
Then the city can go ahead and pay for that assessment, which, as we pointed out previously, is several thousand dollars. Mm-hmm. And it's very expensive. Mm-hmm. And so the city just, I think that everybody at the end just did not have a tragic outcome. Thank God. But it was cracks all the way right until, you know, somebody stepped in, Joan stepped in and said, this is not going to be the way it goes down.
I'm thinking about all these different trajectories and alternative trajectories, right? There's the trajectory where someone along the line would have done the right thing, which is say, hey, hold on, this is something that we know or should have known. And at some point along the line, someone could have been that person. Anyone could have been that person and was not. So that's something that could have happened that could have changed this outcome. Also, just in general, something that could have improved the outcome of this is if there were better mental health services and better health services in general, not just in Albany County, not just in Laramie, not just in the state of Wyoming, but in the United States, if we had a true healthcare system. On the other hand, I'm thinking about all the ways this so easily could have been worse.
Yes.
Than it did, and not necessarily the fact that it wasn't those things is a matter of luck, is really a matter of fortune and luck. Even deeper level, this is America. We are America right here in Laramie, Wyoming, watching mentally ill people get gunned down by cops and watching other mentally ill people get pushed through a system when everyone on the way should have known better. And it's really not a very cool place right now to, you know, particularly to be poor, to be a person of color, or to be mentally ill, any of those things.
Back here to the bigger picture of no system has been established or no protocol has been established to address mentally ill people in any of the places where they're encountering, you know, law enforcement. Thank God it turned out well. There was somebody who was, there was a guardian on the watch, literally.
Yeah.
And we don't have that all the time.
Hey everybody, Solidarity House Cooperative is now on iTunes and Spotify, as well as Podbean and Patreon. You can go to Patreon to support us and any of those platforms to hear us.